Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we've got Don Cox on the show. This is Don's first time on the JMO Podcast, but it's a long time coming. I've known Don just through the industry for quite a few years now, and we really get into Don and his story. He's got a very fun, interesting story. I will say that Don is just one of the most just honest and genuine, talented people that I have met as a result of working in the industry. And so it is very fun and just an honor to have him on the podcast. And this interview, it's really just a fun one. It's just a lot of stories. And you know, a lot of the stuff is entertaining. It's fun. It might make you laugh just hearing the stories from back when. But also there's just a lot of great perspective, and we definitely get into the fishing. And so there can be a lot to learn and a lot to enjoy about this one. One of my favorites all time. So without further ado, let's get into it here. We've got, from the sand hills of Nebraska, Don Cox. If you have any fishing memory or fish that you would like to commemorate with a replica, or you have questions about getting fish replicas done, reach out to Jamie Rizavi from Rizavi Taxidermy Studio in New Rockford, North Dakota. Jamie and his crew do next level work here at the JMO headquarters. We are blessed to have so many replicas made by Jamie. Reach out. You can find him on social media or online at rizavitaxidermystudio.com. The link is in the description of this podcast. Preparing for the upcoming ice fishing season means making great gear choices that will help you maximize your time on the water. That's where Summit Fishing Equipment comes in. The trusted choice for anglers who demand reliable, affordable, and top-quality forward-facing sonar gear and accessories for all the major brands, including Garmin LiveScope, Lowrance Active Target, and Hummingbird Mega Live. Check out their bestseller, the Summit HD CNC Shuttle. It's designed to protect your expensive electronics from harsh winter conditions while keeping everything portable for easy transport. You could pair that up with the lightweight yet robust carbon fiber ice transducer pole and the versatile Summit bag to complete the setup. Crafted from advanced carbon fiber, this forward sonar pole is not only incredibly strong, but also the lightest on the market. Their offerings don't stop at just poles and shuttles. Summit Fishing Equipment offers a full range of bags, mounts, and accessories to customize your fishing rig to your exact specifications. So whether you're a seasoned pro or just getting started, Summit has what you need to improve your experience on the ice. Explore Summit's collection at summitfishingequipment.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Summit Fishing Equipment is also on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Check out Shipswell Resort on Lake of the Woods in northern Minnesota for your next ice fishing destination. Their lodging options are fantastic for small groups, all the way on up to bigger groups like family get-togethers or maybe a corporate outing. Enjoy the comforts of one of their heated day-use fish houses spread between the Morris Point area and the Long Point area as well, to give their guests the most options and opportunities to cover the big lake and to stay on fish. Head to their website, shipswellresort.com, to check out their photo gallery and all their ice fishing packages. That link is in the description of this podcast. Zooloft Construction from Fargo, North Dakota is your trusted partner when it comes to protecting and enhancing your property, servicing the surrounding area with over 40 years of combined experience. They've built a reputation for delivering exceptional roofing, siding, gutter, and window solutions. With a team of skilled professionals using quality brands and products, that's how they ensure lasting results. To sum it up, Zooloft Construction is committed to exceeding customer expectations. If you want an appointment for a free estimate, check out Zooloft Construction at their website, zooloftconstruction.com, or call them at 701-630-0197. All those contacts are in the description of this podcast. Tell the listeners, like, kind of who you are a little bit. I want to know, like, where you're from, where you cut your teeth in fishing, so to speak. Like, what were the fishing opportunities around you? And just sort of give us sort of that origin story as a person, as an angler. We'll start there. Go ahead.
Wonderful. Well, first of all, thank you, Taylor, for being on, allowing me to be on the podcast. It's really an honor to be on this podcast. I listen to it. There's a lot of people that know a lot of things, and it's I get a lot of enjoyment when I'm traveling around on my tractor baling hay in the summertime.
Right.
I am a rancher. in the Sand Hills of Nebraska. I am the fourth generation. The fifth and sixth are on the place. My great grandfather homesteaded here in the early 1900s, and so we've been here ever since. We hope to stay here. But yeah, it's how I got into the ice fishing craze was I solely blame my brother-in-law Dave Fellhofer, which you have met.
Yeah,
he was probably, well, how it all started was we went to a card game on New Year's Eve, my wife and I did. We were just married, and he was helping me at the ranch. We leased a ranch 100 miles east of here at Long Pine, Nebraska, and he wasn't old enough to go to the bar where the card game was, but so he went ice fishing on New Year's Eve, and we went to the card game, and on New Year's Day, he had a whole bucket full of pike, and I had a hangover.
Yeah.
And I said, I don't know what you did, but I want to do that because that looks like a lot more fun than what I did.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where we started. And it's been a pretty crazy adventure all the way through.
You're saying you're kind of like a first generation, like
first generation ice angler for sure.
Oh, man.
So the actual angling was bred into me from both generations going back, well, on my mother's side, clear back to when my great-great-great-grandfather homesteaded in Idaho on the Payette River Valley in near Donnelly, Idaho, in Round Valley. He actually homesteaded and ranched in this valley, and then they eventually Corps of Engineers came in and flooded that, and now it's Lake Cascade, as we know.
Legendary Lake Cascade.
And ironically, when I caught a monster perch on the Jason Mitchell show, was about a mile and a half from where my Samuel Hall homesteaded there. So, pretty unique story.
Oh, yeah, that perch, like, no doubt in its lifetime, fed on some old deeded property of your family.
Exactly, no doubt. No doubt in my mind.
That's crazy.
But anyway,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So they were, that was part of their existence was fishing because all those families had large families. My grandmother had 11 siblings. So you're not, beef and beans is not going to feed everybody all the time.
Yeah.
So they were fishing. My grandmother grew up fishing. My great grandparents, I can remember fishing with them. So that side of the family's always fished and trout fished specifically. And then on my dad's side here in the Nebraska Sandhills, my great uncle Hank, he was definitely the first person that ever took me ice fishing. And he and my dad went out, they just had tip ups fishing for perch. And my brother, I was probably five or six maybe. My brother's 2 years younger than me. And all what I remember is we played hockey on the ice. We didn't really participate in the fishing. We played hockey with scoop shovels and frozen cow turds. That's how we entertained ourselves that day.
There you go.
Yeah. But as far as ice fishing, we didn't do it, but my uncle took us, great uncle took us fishing quite a little bit. My dad was a big fisherman. He liked to backpack into the bighorns of Wyoming, and we'd take, that was our family vacation in the summertime. Hike in there 18 miles one way and get up to where you didn't see civilization and the air was cool. And that's where we spent 10 days.
Neighbors. Yeah. Adventurous. Yeah.
Yeah. So we did our fishing. It just wasn't on the ice till my brother-in-law
yeah,
showed up with all those pike. And then I said, we're going to go do that.
You know, we kind of got to get to where you're at today, but there had to be some memories, some experiences where you felt like you were really getting into it, like passionately or just on a higher level of than just doing it, you know, as a pastime activity. Like can you think back to some of those more incremental stages of your fishing career in the Sand Hills of Nebraska where things started to get a little bit more serious and you started to figure some things out?
Actually, it happened that very first year, ironically. So we started fishing this Calamus Reservoir, which was near the ranch that we were at the time. It, when it was a newly, it, the lake had only been in there 5 or 6 years, near as I remember, at that time. And so it was flush, and you could catch a lot of fish in a hurry through the ice. And at that time, it was, I think we had 50 panfish limits apiece, and I don't remember. All I remember is one night we came home with like 140 fish we had to clean one night.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So we jumped right into catching a lot of fish in a hurry, and for whatever reason, we were just addicted to it. And we saw this advertisement for an ice fishing tournament at Merritt, which was 100 miles west of us at that time. And I said, well, we should get that. We should get into that. You know, it showed all the grand prizes you're going to win. I think it was guaranteed $1,000 and all these door prizes. They had a TV set. They had, what the heck? It was some goofy thing for prizes. And we said, we're going to get in that. We're going to win all this because we know what we're doing at Calamus Reservoir. To prelude all this, you know, I was fresh out of college. My wife and I are both out of college. We both had student loans. I just bought my first bunch of 22 head of cows. Interest rates were 18%. And I had a son that was 6 months old.
Oh, man.
That we were buying diapers for. So my extra change pocket was, I had none. So we enter in this tournament, and it was $25 a piece to get in. So we could pony up the 50 bucks, but we couldn't pony up another 25 bucks a piece to get a motel room. So my mother's house in Mullen is about 50 miles south of the lake. So we thought, well, we'll just stay at my mother's house, and we'll drive back and forth. Well, that wasn't a good idea, because in Calcutta, part of the deal was that if your number got called, and there was probably, I don't know, I bet there's 100 teams plus at this thing. It was crazy. It was a big deal at this tournament that we were going to go win. And
Yeah.
So one of the deals was they had Budweiser was a sponsor, and we were in the fairgrounds building, and they had the Budweiser cases stacked clear to the ceiling. And so if your number got a draw for that, it's however many cases of beer you could walk out the door with without dumping them over. And if you dumped them over, then you had to put them all back and you were out.
Oh, man.
So my brother-in-law, he could carry a lot. Dave could carry a lot of beer. So he got out of there with 6 or 7 cases of beer out the door. We proceeded to drink one. We didn't make it all the way to Mullen in a very timely manner. We didn't make it back to the tournament in a very timely manner, nor did we pack lunch for the next day.
Oh, man.
But we did sat right next to, we were about 50 yards away from the team that won it. And what we didn't know was that Merritt Reservoir, there are spots where you fish that were 50 and 60 foot deep. And our little schoolie reels, you remember the little, they still sell them. They're a little bipod. Little rod with a schoolie reel on it, a little spring bobber on the top.
Yeah. It kind of looks like there's two, like it's got two blanks, kind of one shorter than the other. And
yeah, the loops. That's one.
Yeah, there we go.
So those things, there's not 60 foot of line on those. And they were catching perch at the bottom of the lake, and our lines did not get down to the bottom of the lake. Of course, we never pre-fished at all. We didn't. We just thought we were going to go win this tournament. What we did find out, though, on that whole day was we listened to the people that did win the tournament. And what we found out is we could learn a whole lot more by listening to somebody going to these tournaments and fishing alongside these guys and knew what they're doing and figured out we did not. So we ended up last place, zero fish with a hangover. But we learned something.
Yeah.
And so we started, jumped right into the tournament scene. At that time, Nebraska had, I think we were going to, well, the first year we got beat up. We didn't go to any more tournaments that year, but the next year we noticed that there was more tournaments. I think there was 6 or 7, and these are total weight tournaments. It wasn't a derby. So we started jumping in right away to tournament fishing, and we started learning. The learning curve was a lot slower in those days than it is now, of course. Just because the technology wasn't there, you know, we had a spoon auger and a dull one at that. So we were lucky if we got seven or eight holes in, 3 hours. But listen to these guys and figure it out. You know, it took us, I think it was 4 years from 1990 to 1994, I think was our first. We actually won a check. This is something when you see Fellhoffer, if next time you can rub it in, he won the largest bullhead trophy at Willow Lake. And we got, I don't know, we probably got $50 back. But we were starting to learn, you know, we were starting to learn from these guys. And we had a group of people from Clearwater, Nebraska. And people that know ice fishing will recognize some of the names, but they kind of took us under their wings. One of them was John Minerick. Another one was Rick Hesse. And I think probably everybody knows Jim Hesse. Another one was John Dadowski. So Rick Hesse was Jim Dadowski's dad. And John Dadowski is the father of Zach Nadowski. So it's funny how things kind of work that way.
Sure.
But they were really, they ended up being our mentors, a lot of these guys.
You know, like you talk about the learning, like just the reward of going and learning something, maybe bringing it back to your home water. And on the non-tournament days, the non-competitive days, just feeling rewarded that you were growing as an angler, like how much of that sort of do you feel like influenced you to sign up for the next tournament? Just the growing as an angler part, or was it seriously you guys were just on a mission to win a tournament?
No. After the first tournament, we knew that we were in big trouble. So winning a tournament was way out of what we did figure out is that these people knew what they were doing. We wanted to imitate what they were doing so that we could figure out how to fish more effectively on these any body of water. I mean, they were the best anglers in the state. And we were going to learn from them. That's what we, after that first tournament of merit, every tournament that we entered after that was with that goal in mind. We want to learn the most we can learn about this lake today. And that's what we would do with it. Like I say, we're slow learners. which that just took us a while to for it to soak in. But also, like I said, the technology was not the same. We didn't have a flasher till, I guess we got one our second year. The Vexlar just kind of come out. It still had a little squeaky arm on it. Or it just come out in our area, I guess. Or we saw somebody using one. So we saved up our money and bought it together.
Yeah.
Saved up our money and bought an old Jiffy Model 30 together. Away we went. But it was more about the learning than it was about the winning, for sure.
Yeah. And then somewhere, I mean, you know, again, just sort of like leaping ahead and kind of getting us closer to where you're at today. Because you're like in promotional stuff, you know, involved with Clam and whatnot. Like, I'm curious about that sort of timeline. And I also really, really enjoy the stories of how like you and Jason met. Like that's got to be in the mix here somewhere.
Oh yeah, that's right on the same timeline. So we continued to fish the Nebraska tournaments, and we never actually won one until 1999. So we'd been fishing tournaments for 9 years before we ever, you know, won a tournament. So that tells you how, and we were progressing along. I'm not saying we were that slow. It was, these are tough competitors, and it's not an easy thing to do.
Right.
So we were, by 99, we were starting to win a few. Placing merit is always kind of like the championship tournament in Nebraska. It always has been. It's been a tournament for 40 some years, I believe. But anyway, we're starting to place higher in that one. And then Ice Team was sending out those flyers there in, I want to say 2000 might have been the first one I ever saw. And of course, Pelican Lake and some of the refuge lakes were getting a lot of publicity about then, and Fisherman was down. We were fishing those big bluegill on some of those lakes. And Dave Gintz was on Pelican Lake one day we were there. That was pretty cool to be fishing on the same lake. I think I was close to him. I didn't really know. Of course, I didn't know him at that time, but it looked like him in the picture. but it was also cold and the wind was blowing, so I didn't really know. But we did know that we were on the lake the same day he was, which was pretty impressive to us. But they started that tournament series of trap attacks.
Yeah.
And Fellhoffer and I had always said that was one of our goals, was to go fish Minnesota sometime. And it was 2001, and they had a trap attack on Alexandria, in Alexandria, Minnesota, on Lake Louise, fishing bluegill. And I told Dave, we know how to catch bluegill. Let's go there. So we looked like a caravan. I'm not going to lie to you. We had a Suburban, a little two-horse trailer. We took two teams, my Fellhoffer and I, and then his cousin Mike Horst and one of Mike Horst's buddies, and my wife and my second son, which was a newborn son. And away we went, Tristan, and away we went to Alexandria. And we get right to the boat ramp, and Paul Fabian's the tournament director at that time. He and Dennis Clark and Gintz were kind of running the trap attacks. And we get to the right at the boat ramp, pulling on the ice. I was getting ready to drive on there. My wife says, whoa. She says, you are not taking me and my child on the lake in this outfit. So we stopped, unloaded. Fabian comes up and Fabian terms and says, Big Red, you're parked right in the road. Get your butts out of the boat ramp. And if you know Paul Fabian, his terms are quite colorful. But.
Sure.
So anyway, we fished this tournament, and at that time the top 10 qualified to go to the championships, and we came in 11th.
Check out Shipswell Resort on Lake of the Woods in northern Minnesota for your next ice fishing destination. Their lodging options are fantastic for small groups, all the way on up to bigger groups like family get-togethers or maybe a corporate outing. Enjoy the comforts of one of their heated day-use fish houses spread between the Morris Point area and the Long Point area as well, to give their guests the most options and opportunities to cover the big lake and to stay on fish. Head to their website, shipswellresort.com, to check out their photo gallery and all their ice fishing packages. That link is in the description of this podcast. Zooloft Construction from Fargo, North Dakota is your trusted partner when it comes to protecting and enhancing your property, servicing the surrounding area with over 40 years of combined experience. They've built a reputation for delivering exceptional roofing, siding, gutter, and window solutions. With a team of skilled professionals using quality brands and products, that's how they ensure lasting results. To sum it up, Zooloft Construction is committed to exceeding customer expectations. If you want an appointment for a free estimate, check out Zooloft Construction at their website, zooloftconstruction.com, or call them at 701-630-0197. All those contacts are in the description of this podcast. If you have any fishing memory or a fish that you would like to commemorate with a replica, or you have questions about getting fish replicas done, reach out to Jamie Rizavi from Rizavi Taxidermy Studio in New Rockford, North Dakota. Jamie and his crew do next level work here at the JMO headquarters. We are blessed to have so many replicas made by Jamie. Reach out. You can find him on social media or online at RizaviTaxidermyStudio.com. The link is in the description of this podcast. Preparing for the upcoming ice fishing season means making great gear choices that will help you maximize your time on the water. That's where Summit Fishing Equipment comes in. The trusted choice for anglers who demand reliable, affordable, and top-quality forward-facing sonar gear and accessories for all the major brands, including Garmin LiveScope, Lowrance Active Target, and Hummingbird Mega Live. Check out their bestseller, the Summit HD CNC Shuttle. It's designed to protect your expensive electronics from harsh winter conditions while keeping everything portable for easy transport. You could pair that up with the lightweight yet robust carbon fiber ice transducer pole and the versatile Summit bag to complete the setup. Crafted from advanced carbon fiber, this forward sonar pole is not only incredibly strong, but also the lightest on the market. Their offerings don't stop at just poles and shuttles. Summit Fishing Equipment offers a full range of bags, mounts, and accessories to customize your fishing rig to your exact specifications. So whether you're a seasoned pro or just getting started, Summit has what you need to improve your experience on the ice. Explore Summit's collection at summitfishingequipment.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Summit Fishing Equipment is also on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Now, I do want to I want to interject and talk and get into some of the fishing. What were your confidences in traveling to try to catch some bluegill somewhere else? And you guys look at each other like, hey, I think we can, let's just go test our mettle catching bluegill somewhere. What did that really mean to you?
So, like, especially on our sandhill lakes, not all of them have weed beds, of course, but most of them do that have the bigger bluegill. And so we figured out how to, even back in the day before LiveScope and whatever, we figured out, and we didn't have an AquaView camera, but we figured out there was trails, like game trails. And then you'd find a spot where, a spot on a spot, so to speak, where it might be a hole in the weeds or it might be an intersection of where these fish are running. And so we could target these bluegill and these weeds. And so we thought, you know, we looked at, we do a lot of research on any lake we fish. We still do to this day. Onyx Fish is going to be my very best friend. There's no doubt in my mind when it comes to Nebraska, when they open that up, and all the other states we fish. But anyway, we done research. We knew that it was a rimmed around weed lake, Lake Louise. And so we thought, no problem. The first day, well, we were crazy in those days. We'd drive all night on Friday night, get up there, pre-fish on Saturday, tournament on Sunday. That's just how we ran the whole time. Very little pre-fishing. We figured out right away the pumpkin seeds were the heavy fish. That's what you wanted to target. So we targeted the pumpkin seeds in the weeds. Thought we had a winning bucket. Come to find out, Dave Young had went from Michigan, had went out and visited with a local that was set up over open water between two humps. And the biggest bluegills suspend and feed on copepods in low light periods. And so the top 10 teams all had their fish by 8:30 in the morning. And Dave and I ground our way out in the weeds all day for 11th place. So like I say, that was a perfect question for what we were doing, because we still didn't know it all. See, we just learned another thing at our tournament.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it was – that's the fun part about – and I really love ice fishing for that part, is every day is different. Our sandhill lakes, every day is different. I'm sure everybody's – every day is different.
Yeah. And you talk about – you know, what we would consider nowadays like primitive. You guys were, you know, you had a Vexilar, or, you know, like you're going to this tournament in Alexandria, you're attacking it with weed fish, you're doing your own research, and you know, you got two teams, so you're working off of each other, and
we always ran solo. It's always been our motto. We don't use anybody else's intel. It's just always a solo. I don't know, it's something goofy about Fellhoffer and I. We've just always operated that way. But
well, you're purists, man. Like, you know, I can totally appreciate that. So you guys were your own team, doing your own deal. But even now, right, like we can reflect and learn from what you were doing back then. Like, you know, you had equipment that was you know, good enough or, you know, in its day at that time, but we would consider it primitive now looking back. You know, you had a loud auger, and you know, but I'm sort of curious of like, what did you guys do back then to be efficient on competition day? And what were some of the things, you know, I'm sure you ran into all kinds of tough conditions, but getting, you know, really stingy fish to bite. I'm curious what it was like back then when you guys were growing as anglers, learning a ton. What were some of the big aha moments when it came to like putting a big tourney grade fish topside?
Yeah, another great question. It all just kind of flowed together from the tournament fishing that we'd done in Nebraska. Same thing. A lot of our lakes, when they would get turned tough, we learned from the best around here, downsize. Stay mobile, try to find, you know, just keep moving. That was probably our key goal. Eventually, you're going to hit a hungry fish someplace. And my Fellhoffer, he can tie more lures in 1 minute than anybody I know. So presentation was never a problem. He'd usually dial in the presentation. I was more about finding the avenues or whatever that the fish were running. And together we all, we've just always made a great team. I've appreciated that with Dave, but where we got 10th or 11th place at Alexandria, 3 weeks down the road, there was a tournament at Webster, South Dakota. And we said, we got to go fish for the championship. At that time, the championship was $10,000 in the gold ring. And besides that, we enjoyed visiting with Paul Fabian, Dennis Clark, and Dave Gintz. That was about as cool as it got, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So we go there, win Waw Bay, win the perch tournament at Waw Bay.
And that's an away game for you guys.
Oh, yeah. Perch fishing. We have some perch fishing, but it wasn't like that kind of perch fishing. That was amazing. First time we'd ever been to South Dakota fishing.
Yeah, I think those stories alone are great. And, you know, you comment, we can't go too much farther in this conversation without laughing about how back then, just sort of how your early interactions with, you know, guys like Gens, and it's like now you guys are great friends. And it's sure. So isn't it kind of, it's just kind of funny to look back on that these stories of the industry ain't all that big, you know, but like back then that when tourney fishing was, you know, the ice fishing tournament scene was definitely a big deal. And like all these stories, I mean, this is a big deal. I mean, like you say, you guys were young guys, you know, getting into it, you know, going against anytime you probably went somewhere, it was all local sticks would all sign up. Right. And it's like,
oh, sure. It was, you never knew. And then of course we can go down that rabbit hole too, the progression, but on that same year, you were asking about the interaction between Jason Mitchell and us, how we got introduced. Well, it all tied into that same year because we qualified for the championship. Then we go back to Alexandria, that's Minnesota, where the championships are that year, 2001. And lo and behold, here comes Zippy Doll and Jason Mitchell down to the championships. They want to see what's going on.
Yeah.
And of course, Zippy's holding court. He's got everybody, and us included, enamored in his stories. And you know as well as I do, he can tell a story like nobody else. So we're all in this, in the championship. I got to hand it to the Clark and Gintz and all those guys that put that together. It was in the Holiday Inn, you know, tablecloths, white tablecloths. They had the best dishes on the table. And we walk in, a bunch of ice fishermen, here we are, and we should be in a suit. We're in our, you know, hoodies.
Yeah.
But so while Zippy's up there holding court, everybody's paying attention. Mitchell's kind of sitting over there in the wet bar area, and Fellhoffer and I start feeding him Budweiser's, whatever his beer was of choice. And so pretty soon we were learning quite a little bit about fishing Devil's Lake.
Oh, yeah.
From Mitchell, who was being kind of quiet in the corner. That awesome. Didn't last forever, but it was sure, it sure did us good for a while.
Yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, they did, you know, Gens, they brought that Trap Attack stuff out to Devil's.
You bet.
Yeah, we fished
there 2 years. I think it was 2 years after that, two or three, we were up at Devil's.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I just love that stuff. And I like that, you know, talking about, just the fishing and the strategy back then. I mean, because, you know, first off, we can't let all that stuff be lost on us, right? Because we have all this technology nowadays. We definitely still have to remember,
sure. You
know, what things were like, because some of those light bulb moments, like they meant more back then because that learning curve was so, you know, like you say, it was a slower learning curve. So when big light bulb moments happened, it was like pretty unbelievable. You know, we're talking competition, but even if you were just a real passionate, any everyday type of angler, like figuring things out that just make your day of fishing that much better is like, it's such a big deal. It's such a reward. It, you know, it's like, these are like lifelong memories. It's like such a thing.
And it's like most people do. I mean, successful people go to work, you know, you're doing your work before you get to the lake, you're doing your work with your equipment. Once you're on the lake, you know, he and I would split up. Even to this day, we still do that, even with my boys. When we get to a new lake, and we like to fish a lot of new lakes, we try to as many as we can in a season, but we'll split up and we'll just each go a different direction. And and cut it up and see what we find.
Yeah. Well, and actually that is some of my notes. So this is definitely a segue here. I want to latch on to what you're talking about there. So, or where and when did sort of traveling to fish, and I don't mean for competition, because, you know, you just got back recently from a pretty unbelievable destination fishing trip, you know, going up to Alaska to fish Arctic char. Like, I mean, that's just like an unbelievable thing. But like, so like destination fishing, going places, breaking down new water, learning about new species you've never caught before. Like, that's something that you're good at. It's a very big thing for you nowadays. When and how does this all like connect?
I think it's still all tied into the competition fishing. It was just, competitions got, they just changed, you know, things changed. I changed. It wasn't as, I still fish tournaments. We'll still fish the Merit tournament, mostly just for nostalgia reasons more than anything, but it's still fun to compete, but to go break down a new lake, that just, I don't know. It's rewarding. It always has been for me, even from our early days. Like you say, once the light bulb comes on, there's just something about that. And then to target a species you've never even thought about before, or you thought about and said that's a pipe dream, like this Arctic char trip. I can remember looking at it. First time I think I saw an Arctic char was in Field and Stream when I was in study hall in eighth grade, you know. And you say, look at that beautiful fish all colored up like that. And so then you look into it, and you look into it a little more. And I would have never taken this trip had it not been for 2 years ago. I actually to start this. How long's your program?
No, we're going, man. We're good. We're good. Okay. No time.
Okay. Well, so 2 years ago in 22, I did a quest. I wanted to find out how many states I could fish in one season. And when that, and how that all started was back in 2006. We were flying to Silver Lake, New York to fish an ice fishing tournament there because we were kind of in the hunt for team of the year that year. And so we were, as I was on the plane, boarded the plane in Omaha, and we were flying. It was a clear day. You could look down and I could see all these lakes I was flying over. And I asked Dave, I said, well, how many of these lakes do you suppose hold fish? And then we decided, I wonder how many of these lakes Dave Gentz has fished.
Yeah.
We decided maybe most of them. But anyway, that got me thinking, and he and I had a conversation about, well, I wonder how many lakes a person could fish in one season on the ice and catch fish through the ice. And so that's been in the back of my head since 2006. And in 2022, I just said, I'm doing it. I had an opportunity. I had help here at the ranch. I had two of my sons here. And so away I went. And it was unbelievable. It was one of those life changing deals all the way around. It was pretty cool.
Did you have a big plan for that? Did you research every single like destination deal?
Oh, I worked for years. Yeah, for years I've been working on this. I've got paperwork while I'm sitting down in my fishing room, and I've got paperwork that fills up one cupboard that's it's 2 foot tall and 18 inches wide, completely full of papers and research. I'm still kind of old school. I do have quite a little bit of stuff on my computer, but the maps, all the stuff that I thought about since 2006, really.
Yeah. Yeah. I just find it fascinating. I mean, when you're doing research for a trip like this and years is going into it, you're doing research, you're probably picking out lakes. What was your selection process like, and how much did your fishing brain sort of I'm curious how your fishing brain was operating of like, let's go to these places because they look like fun, because I think we'd be good at it. Which destinations or lakes did you pick out because you thought you could learn a bunch? Maybe we're not good at it, but we're going to learn, like, species specific. Like, I'm curious how your fish brain was working when you were planning out this like unbelievable like road trip to fish X amount of states, X amount of lakes. like, you know, something that you or most probably anybody had never done before in one season?
Well, it was, to be honest with you, I'm very cheap at heart. So when I started lining up lakes, when I first started, actually, I was targeting lakes that I'd really love to fish, you know.
Right.
You name the state, I'd really love to fish it. But as it turned out, I'm cheap at heart. And so what I found was places that I could fish and bounce to another lake, be efficient. That was the other goal, is I had to be efficient at doing it. So like on my very first five lakes, I accomplished catching a fish through the ice in the first five states in 3 days. So I started in Montana, Baker, Montana, bounced across into North Dakota. I don't remember the name of the little town there. Caught a fish there. Came down to the Black Hills, fished with Craig Euler. Caught a fish there, Wyoming, and then down to Colorado. So I had, like I said, all those fish in all those states in 3 days.
Oh, man. Okay. So yeah.
So, but the other thing was, is I was also targeting lakes that I could legitimately catch a fish, you know, I have a high probability. So I was going through all the creel surveys, what was in there. Most of them were yellow perch. Those are pretty easy to target most of the time and willing to bite. Sometimes bluegill are not so willing to, and crappie are not so willing to bite.
Yeah.
Trout, anytime you get a salmonoid of any kind, you never know what their mood's going to be. So sometimes those are kind of difficult to target. So that was kind of my mindset as how that went. So we went in different stages, but as it turned out, my boys got to travel with me. That was the highlight of the whole thing. I incorporated the entire family. And even Dave Gintz was here for the state of Nebraska. That was pretty cool, too.
Yeah, it was like at certain stages, you had quite a posse at times.
Yeah, the whole goal was to utilize the network of people that Gintz has put together for all these years, mm-hmm. and to fish with them. That was really the goal. But, of course, when you start getting schedules and travel delays and weather, then schedules don't always work very good with hitting everybody. But I would say at least 50% of the states I got a clam pro. Got a fish with a clam pro from one of the states. That was awesome.
But I mean, that was like you were probably already confident and on a high, you know, efficiency of like studying fisheries. But that had to have been, you know, like if you were to look at the totality of it and bring it all in, it's like you say, you're in your fishing room right now looking at stack files and stacks, handwritten stuff, you know, you got digital, and then just probably stuff that was easy enough to remember that's probably not documented anywhere else but in your brain. Like, that'd be like the totality of it's like a master class in lake study.
It was intense. There's no doubt about it. It was my wife was ready to throw me out of the house, but before I was ready to go, because, and of course, yeah, you have to adjust. We had to adjust on the fly. That's just the way it works. But
sure.
Like Arizona, that's a state. I'd worked on that state for 3 years, and I could not get an ice report from anybody reliable. So I ended up being the weatherman. I had to figure out whether there was going to be ice at 8,800 feet at this location. And it turned out we got lucky, you know, there was, but it could have went the other way because I had nobody to contact, you know?
Yeah, man. I mean, just... So what do you feel like in all your study, in all that lake study and stuff, like if we're just looking at the fishing, you know, I mean, there's obviously, like you said, there's some weather elements to some of these locations, but probably there's some give and take with that because in other areas you didn't have to worry about ice or weather. But like, what do you feel like you spent the most time on when it came to like lake study?
You bet. It was mostly population in size, structure, creel surveys. Just catchable fish that, like, we ended up in, they lost their ice from Illinois through Ohio. And we had a shot my very last trip with Tristan on our way back from the East Coast, from Maine and New York. we had a shot. We were shooting through a window of a storm to try to get home. And so we needed to get Wisconsin on the way back. And then we had a shot at an Illinois lake just right across the border. And we were researching. Tristan was researching as we were driving. And they just, it just been a renovation. We thought, well, we got a chance. It's our only chance we're going to get to hit Illinois. So we tried it for, we gave it about 3 hours, more than we should have. And we just, we could see the fish, but they weren't, you know, they weren't big enough to bite the lures. So that was the only lake that I did not catch a fish that we tried to, that I bought a license for that we attempted to and didn't catch it.
Right on. I find that, I think that's interesting, you know, because again, so much to learn from this. It's like, I wasn't even there. I do remember following along with you doing it, but like, you know, like not participating in it, but hearing the story, and it's like, you did so much lake study for so many lakes that you had never been to, never seen, but you know, looking at creel surveys, looking at, you know, navigating State Department websites is not always easy to even get to this information. But once you get there and, you know, and you're seeing it, and you got to probably do it lake by lake by lake, you know, individual. Like, nobody's got a very efficient way of breaking down stuff. Like you say, though, this Onyx Fish Maps.
Oh, man.
When that really kicks in for more states, you know, right now, Minnesota and Wisconsin, they've got, like, when you can do something like that where you just filter out your what you want your criteria to be, and then you look in that zone or in that area, and it tells you this lake, and this lake all have what you're looking for. Like, oh my gosh. So yeah, there's that. But you were like Onyx Fish Maps before Onyx Fish Maps. In fact, they should probably come and sit down and look through some of your files. The off the water study and preparation, just the results, you know, are just undeniable. That's, I spend a ton of podcasts just talking about, you know, the off the water homework that you can do to sort of get a better understanding of the opportunities that are out there. And what you did is like, just like a graduate level, you know, just on the scale of it, like you're just doing it like crazy, but to learn that those creel surveys, those surveys really kind of gave you the best understanding or confidence as to what those opportunities were going to be when you got there. I think that's interesting.
Yeah, that's my passion, I guess, research. I enjoy the research as much as I do catching the fish, to be honest. You know, when I can go to a new lake and catch that fish that I've targeted or whatever, when we were in Alaska and caught that colored up char, that was like a Super Bowl ring for me. That was unbelievable.
Dude, tell me a little bit about that. You recently, just a few weeks ago, just ahead of the holidays, I think it was, right? You got back from Alaska. Dude, tell me, like, when did this trip, the planning of this trip start, and what was that like? And just kind of give me the, you know, 10-15 minute version if you can.
So the 22, my last trip was Alaska, and we do have clam pros up there. I talked to Dennis Musgrave. He's in Fairbanks, well, North Pole, Alaska. That didn't work, so I tied in with Alex Spees. He says, yep, come up. We can catch you a fish through the ice in Alaska. So I wasn't for sure. I'd never met Alex, so I gave myself 3.5 days on my flight. He says, oh, yeah, no problem. So we'll go up. We'll catch a trout in this lake, and you'll be fine. And he was right. Within 10 minutes, I had my rainbow trout in Alaska. And I said, well, what do I do now? And he says, well, you don't have a hair on your butt if you don't go fish native Arctic char in Big Lake, Alaska.
Okay.
So for the next 3 days, this is in April, the ice is clear of the auger tilt on the auger. And I fished Big Lake, Alaska for Arctic char. And I hooked into 3 fish. There were char. The only native fish I caught was a little bitty stickleback.
But oh, man.
I hooked into 3 char, landed 0. But the fight of these fish, I knew I was coming back. The very last one I hooked into, it was like a freight train. I don't know how big the fish. It was a very large fish, I would say. I couldn't even guess because I couldn't have no idea to gauge.
Well, how big do Arctic char get? Like, what's the size structure?
That lake, if you catch a 30 incher, that's their master angler or whatever.
Okay.
They, that's probably, from my research, I would say 31, 32 inches is probably the maximum for that lake. They get larger in other parts of the region. But Big Lake is very unique. It's a legitimate shot at a native Arctic char. To be specific, native fish, there's only 17 places in the world you can catch a native Arctic char. Big Lake, Alaska is probably the one that you can most readily do it through the ice. Well, without a doubt, it's most available through the ice.
Gotcha.
So that's what I was doing there. After he says, you got to go there and catch a native char, I missed all three. Landed zero. But the fight, I told myself I'm coming back as soon as possible. And I did.
And you brought the posse. I like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I said, I'm going to Alaska. Who wants to go? And we had enough room for four people in the house we got. So four people came along. Garrett, my son Garrett, he ended up catching the largest char, a 25, just a beautiful fish. And those fish they fight like nothing I've ever tied into. It's, I would call it the sports car of a lake trout. They just go ballistic. There's, I don't know what to say about it. It's nuts.
And they're also different looking, you know. But like you say, like there's, and I think that probably ties into, you know, maybe you see it in yourself. Maybe it's real obvious to you. Maybe it's not. But like, you know, a lot of your stories, you know, you're probably just through and through, you're kind of a purist in life. You know, you talk about your tournament fishing and just that sort of, you know, that clean approach to just, you know, you embrace the competition of it and you want to test your own mettle. So it's you. You don't share information. You're not doing anything other than figuring out your own deal, and where, let the chips fall where they may, and doing all your own research to do this big long road trip in 2022, fish as many states, fish as many lakes, catch as many fish in as many states as you can through the ice. You're the one doing the lakes. Or you could have just called up every, you know, like you said, a clam pro. You could have called up an ice team pro that guides on any given lake in any one of these states. You didn't have to do any of the research on your own. You could have just leaned on them and just drove there.
Sure.
And caught the fish that they put you on. But you wanted to embrace it completely. And now you got this Alaska deal where, you know, there's probably some people out there that could maybe put a finger on places to catch Arctic char through the ice that might be, you know, I guess, I don't know, but maybe they're easier or maybe they're bigger or whatever.
So they're a lot closer to Alaska.
Yeah. A lot closer than Alaska. But yet you're going somewhere, that has that sort of essence or energy that it's native.
Right.
And these are the real ones. And they're such a cool fish. You obviously embrace what's cool about them. You obviously embrace what's cool about every fish that you catch. And you know, you just saw something in that that fishing experience that you wanted to taste again. But even, you know, even what you didn't in actually landing one. So you go back and, visit the social media posts, on your social media. I love all that stuff. But what's cool to me, watching you guys catch the fish, seeing the smiles in the pictures and the videos and whatever, but what a cool fish. Like,
oh, they're
every,
awesome. Yeah.
Every one that you bring up, you don't know what the colors are going to be. You don't even know if this, I mean, they probably all look cool right in their own right. And if you go through all the work to actually get one topside, it's unbelievable. So even if it's an ugly mug, even if it's not one of the real colored up ones, it's still like really a cherished deal. But what a cool fish in that regard, man. Man.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we targeted them in December. They spawn in late fall. So you won't get a colored one like in April. I never would have got a colored fish unless it was, you know, an accident. But this time of year we had it's about 50% of the fish we caught had some, the males had some color. So that was, and that lake is char or not. It's not like we caught 50 fish. We earned every fish. We were up there fish for 5 days and you earned them. That even makes it more special too.
Oh yeah. Yeah, man. Yeah, that's the deal, man. And I think that as long as I've known you, which goes back, I don't even know exactly what year it was, but it was within the first 2 or 3 years working for Jason that we came down and fished down in Nebraska, and that was when I met you, and that was like still to this day, fast forward a decade working for Jason, I can definitely say that that was one of the most enjoyable, one of the most influential. Like, I knew right then and there that I would enjoy every chance of listening, talking, fishing next to, being anywhere near you and your group of guys down there, because it's like, it's just such genuine energy. But man, you guys are just so fishy in your own right. You're so fishy. I know you know that, and you've heard that, but it's like, you're so fishy anywhere you go. And then been being lucky enough to actually do destination trips with you, going out to Cascade, I see you in action.
Awesome. Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, I see you in action on your home lakes, but then a few years later, I see you guys in action on a destination, on a reservoir, a totally different deal, a totally different state. And it's like, man, it was just literally like every time getting anywhere near you guys or paying attention to, like I say, the social media, the stories, anything that you guys are doing, it's like watching SEAL Team 6 doing stuff. It's like, you know, it's just like, you know, if you want to learn and learning, you know, you can learn in a lot of places, right? That's true. But if you want, it's really is the real deal. You guys, you know, you don't regurgitate information that maybe somebody else said or did. Like, when you guys come up with ideas, it's like, it's your own deal, and you attack it. You execute with everything you got, and then where the chips fall, when I can hear about it, I know, you know, when you talk about something that happened or something that you did, I know that it was what you did. Like, I know that it was your experience, and you articulate it really well.
Well, no. Yeah, no different. You and Jason, same thing. You guys own it. You guys got to put together. We appreciate that too. Honesty has always been, you know, the fishing industry, it weeds out the people that don't do it the right way, I guess.
Yeah, and none of it's illegal in most cases, right? Like, talking about media and sharing information or this or that. But man, there's no question that. Man, when you guys are out there doing something, sharing a photo, sharing an experience, it's like, it's definitely what you did. It's definitely the deal. And yeah, man, if anybody ever had the opportunity to fish on the same lake as you guys, even if, it's real windy and cold and you're all dressed up, but you look like you do in the pictures, you pay attention, you know, just like you guys thinking it's cool to be on the same lake as Gens way back in the day. That's what I definitely, have always felt, anytime, the few times that I've been in and around you guys, it's like, man, we're on the same body of water as Cox and the team and the squad. And it's like, I just love seeing you guys operate. It's hard. Sometimes I need GPS tracker, especially with Fellhofer. Jeepers, how do you got to put a collar on that guy sometimes?
Yeah, we do. Yeah.
Oh my
gosh. You never know where he's going to be.
Oh my gosh. Man, yeah. Oh, it's good stuff. But anyways,
you're gonna need a birthday cake coming up. You might need some
Believe me,
fish roe, some perch roe, and
yeah, you know what? I can eat that. I can handle that. The eyeballs, I'm not saying I've never eaten an eyeball. You know, like nobody. I'm not going to confirm or deny whether or not I've eaten a perch eyeball. But that being said, I kind of draw the line at the fins. And I don't need any eyeballs moving forward, but the roe, and pair that up with a nice muffin. I'm telling you that's a birthday cake right there,
brother.
That's a birthday cake right there. Yeah, man. Oh man. Well, all these stories, we got a deep dive on so many different things, but, that being said, I appreciate the time for this one, man. I think we should definitely close it out. I appreciate the time. I don't want to take up all your whole evening, and we have to do this again. I've got a whole list of things that we'll dive into, including, you know, basin panfish in, the sand hills of Nebraska. We got to do that too. Obviously I'll reserve that for you, but, and maybe again this season, maybe this season, we have you back on here in short order. But that being said, if there's nothing else eating at you, let's sign this one off. This has been great. If anybody wants to ask questions or follow along on your exploits or look back on some of your exploits and get in touch with your socials, where can people find you?
Yeah, just get a hold of me on Facebook at Don Cox or If you want to follow the 25-state adventure, you can go to the DC to Ice. It's also linked in my bio. So, but I appreciate it, Taylor. I appreciate you documenting all these people. Like I said, there's so much information out there. If people haven't listened to your podcast, they should. It's a huge resource.
Man, yeah, I appreciate that. We try every once in a while.